We've got the murder, of course, and a clear solution to the crime portion of the story. We have a rescue dog, properly renamed Oslo, mountains of baked goods, full circle endings for all our key secondary characters, sparkly holiday moments where folks are flailing about in the snow while flirting. But somehow the story is almost over, and Dorothy Middleton and her love interest still aren't together yet. I mean, it's obvious they're a delightful match. Why aren't they doing something about it? And why are all these side characters suddenly bursting onto the page? Is it even believable that Oslo the rescue dog can be in a room by himself with an unguarded roast beef on the table and do absolutely nothing about it? What would Deborah have done? And why am I so cold? I roll the chair over to the couch and sneak the Afghan out from under Oslo while he snoozes upside down. I have never met a dog that slept quite so much and with such total abandon of his appendages. Sighing, I sink down farther into the computer chair. I want to give up. No, I'll never give up. Focus, Abby, focus. I keep typing. For I have been given a sacred duty, and I will fulfill my obligations if it's the last thing I do. Especially if Dove keeps cooking for me. Besides, we're almost done. I added in all the ideas from my notes, and I've been typing furiously from the moment Dove relinquished control. The fear of failure passes as I write, and I remember again what a privilege it is to wrap up the loose ends for this beloved series. I think Oslo can sense I'm on fire, that the book is going well. He wakes up and stops waving his paws about in the air and then trots over to me with a hopeful look on his face. Thanks for asking, I say to him. It's going well. We almost have a complete first draft. It's time to reread it and edit it a bit. Make sure there are no glaring errors. Make sure we've included everything we wanted and did all we could to make her readers feel as good as they can possibly feel. I wrinkle my nose. When the news gets out into the industry, and then to her fan base, that there will be no more D.B. Ziegler cozy mysteries and why, people are going to be sad. But if I do my very best to make this book as close as I can to what she intended, that's something Dove and I can feel proud of. I already know that we'll have something to turn into the editor on the first day back from vacation. But what I really want is to write something that will allow Dove to move on. Hey, Abby, Dove shouts from the kitchen. Does it seem colder than usual? Yes. Everything okay? Yeah, don't worry about it, he calls back. I take off the Afghan wrapped around my shoulders and realize that it is freezing. Absolutely freezing. Did the boiler actually break? I look out the window, and it's still a thick blanket of white. The snowblowers haven't gotten to us yet, and there is nobody outside except a couple of kids playing on a snowy stoop across the street. If they tried to make it down to the sidewalk, they would probably be up to their necks in snow. Just standing at the window makes me shiver. Dove enters the room behind me, all business, bustling around the fireplace, arranging logs and taking out matches. Hand me some of that, he says, pointing to the kindling box next to the fireplace. The box is full of used paper, so I grab a bunch and jam it in his hand. He crumples it up, stuffs it in between the logs, and lights a match. Wait a minute, is that? Stop, I yell. Stop! In a panic, I blow out the flame. What the heck? I rifle through the paper bin in a frenzy. Oh my gosh, there are story notes in here. It's scratch paper, he says. Scrawl, no actual typing. But it's her brainstorming, I say reverently. Please don't burn it. I pull the wads of crumpled paper back out of the fireplace. Then I flatten them one by one and take the entire pile away from the fireplace. Let's just put on more sweaters and blankets, I say. We end up sitting cross-legged on the sofa with a pile of blankets on top of us, fortifying ourselves with hot jasmine tea and a plate of sugar-rolled donuts. I would have thought my tolerance was pretty high, but I'm no match for the combined strength of sugar coma, a glowing fire, and Dove's warm body next to mine. I start to doze off, vaguely conscious of the fact that my head has lulled against his shoulder. I know I should get back to writing, but I don't recall feeling this warm and cozy in the longest time. The taste of sugar lingers on my tongue, and I'm lulled by the solid feel of Dove against my cheek. It occurs to me as I drift off that the solution to the problem of the unresolved romance in Deborah's book is very simple. Dorothy and her love interest just have to say out loud to each other what they already know.
Chapter 11. Dove. Abby is snoozing against my arm. She's wearing several layers of my clothing, accessorized by a tiny sprinkling of sugar decorating her cheekbone. I reach over and brush the sprinkles away. She worked so hard today. The weight of her against my shoulder is so wonderful that I feel impossibly sad as I stare through the large picture window watching a New York City snowplow turn onto my street. It's soon followed by a small group of men with snowblowers making their way down the sidewalks. The book, the moral support, getting through my first Hanukkah without my grandmother. I need to tell Abby how grateful I am for her help. If she weren't here, I'd have to do all of this alone. But it wouldn't be right not to tell her she can go home if she wants to. Abby, I whisper. Abby, wake up. They're clearing the roads, so the subways are probably running again. Abby releases the tiniest, most adorable little snore I've ever heard. If I had some spare containers, I'd box it up and save it. I think you wanted to know, I add. She puts her arm around me and squeezes herself closer, flinging her leg over mine. I sigh. Abby? Abby stirs and mumbles, mm-hmm. And then she sits up a little and drops her head on my shoulder. She nuzzles my neck a bit. I stoically count manuscript pages in my head. I really need you to wake up and process that none of this is my fault, I finally manage to say. What do you mean? She says in a muffled voice due to the fact that her mouth is against the nape of my neck. After a beat, I feel the faint brush of her eyelashes against my jaw, and then her body goes tense and still. I think she opened her eyes. I think she's awake. I'm still staring up at the ceiling, willing myself to think nothing of this. What am I doing? Abby yelps, pushing off me so hard I nearly fall off the couch. She stares at me in horror. Now that you're up, I can get up too, I say calmly. I stand up and do a couple of stretching exercises. I have the compulsion to add a couple of push-ups in front of her, but she's no longer looking at me anyway. She's standing in front of Bubby's front window, staring out at Manhattan coming back online.
Chapter 12. Abby. I'm a little disoriented. I think I was snuggling Dove in my sleep. He had to wake me up to get me off him. Yikes. I checked my watch, blinking to clear the fog in my brain. He checked his phone, and apparently the subways are running. And they've cleared the sidewalk outside. Does this mean I should leave? It's past working hours, and Snowmageddon is officially over, so maybe it's weird that I'm still here. Or maybe it's weird that I don't want to leave. But it's weirder that I want to stay. And if I go home to get clothes and come back, is that even weirder? Dove comes out of the kitchen slowly, holding a soup ladle and wearing an apron and a confused expression. So, I guess, I say breezily, leaving lots of space between words so Dove can interrupt me at any time. Go ahead and interrupt me, Dove. The floor is yours. But he's just studying my face and carrying a soup ladle. There's nothing for me to do but say somewhat haltingly, if the storm is over and the roads are clear, I guess both Oslo and I should go home? I wait for him to say that I shouldn't, and he promptly says, that would make sense. But I'm in the middle of reviewing a chapter, I say, so maybe now isn't the right time, objectively speaking. He perks up a bit. Right? That would be inefficient. You'd have to start from scratch, and I'd have to reread like 3 chapters to get into the flow again on edits. We should save that kind of effort for the final audio read, you know? To make sure that what sounds good in print also sounds good on Audible. I don't want to let her audiobook fans down. I think he might want me to stay, as much as I want him to want me to stay. I'm just not clear yet on whether it's for me or the book. I didn't think of that, I say. It's definitely worth the time to make it sound as good as it looks. So maybe I should stay here a little longer. That makes the most sense, objectively speaking. I assumed we'd be working late again, so I was going to make dinner. Did you already start? I did, Dove says, It would be wasted if you left. Oh, you did? What are we having?
I don't know.
Oh, I started thinking about it. So you shouldn't go until after dinner because I've already been thinking about it. I'm beginning to think the two of us are having word salad for dinner. I know why I'm so awkward, but why is he? What I'm saying is that it would be inefficient to not follow through, Dove says. Oh gosh, he is cute. He's holding a soup ladle up, trying to look like he has an actual plan. But we know we're having soup, I say. He looks at the ladle as if he's seeing it for the first time.
Yes.
I like soup, I say encouragingly.
I do too, he says.
So stay for soup. I'll read the latest and we can talk about it if we feel like it. And at that point, if it makes sense, I'll go home. And if it doesn't, I'll stay. He heads back into the kitchen.
What would make it make sense?
To stay or go? I ask, panicking a little.
To stay. Would dessert help?
We look at each other. I wonder if he can tell I'm blushing. Dessert always helps, I blurt, and dart back to the desk behind the safety of the monitor. We're so awkward. I bite my lip and look down at the manuscript, but I don't process any of the words, because this, whatever this is developing between us, is also kind of wonderful. I wish I knew what he was thinking right now.
Oi, Abby,
what's wrong with you? He's obviously thinking he wishes the book was done. Well, if I want to impress him, here's my chance. So I force myself to focus. I'm able to comb through Deborah Ziegler's brainstorming notes, find some clues about how she planned Dorothy Middleton's romantic ending, and then build her ideas into a satisfying final chapter. And her idea was really quite clever. The story ends with the male love interest finally offering to share his family's top-secret cheesecake babka recipe, a long-running joke between them, but only if Dorothy will marry him first. The moment flows naturally the minute I start writing it. This is the recipe Dove should put in the back of the book? What a perfect end! If only real life were that simple. Hey, Dove, I yell as I stand up and head toward the kitchen. Do you have an amazing recipe for babka? The phone rings. Dove smiles as he answers the call. I hear several people all at once yell, "We're back!" and "We miss you out there!" and "We're on our way back to New York. Did you have an okay holiday?" I'm hit by a sinking sensation. Dove has plenty of other people asking about him. He's not alone. We're not having some crazy special two lonely people falling in love over the holiday experience. There's only one lonely person, and it's me. I really liked him needing me. Maybe I needed him just as much. Dove bends down.
You look weird. Everything okay?
I'm fine, I chirp. Were those your friends?
Yeah, they're heading back in after the holidays. A bunch of them snowbirded to warmer climes, as they say.
Were you supposed to go with them?
Oh, I canceled on them a while ago. Basically, after it took me 2 hours to write a single sentence. A sentence that you have since deleted, actually.
We have to laugh a little at that. I guess I'll be leaving you in good hands.
You worried about me?
He asks flippantly. Yes, I say seriously. He turns serious too.
Oh.
It seems like he has more to say, but he goes quiet. I look down at my hands. Anyway, at least I know you'll be eating well.
I won't be cooking much after I go back to work, though. I get home pretty late and, well, it's not as fun to cook for one. You know, Abby, maybe you and I could...
He doesn't finish his sentence. His eyes are searching my face. Maybe he doesn't know what to say right now, but I do. I should tell him the big news, that after polishing up a few spots, we'll be done with the book tonight. Obviously, this moment was inevitable, but it feels different than I expected. We're one set of edits away from turning it in. My red pen is poised over the last page in the completed manuscript. Sure, it's not perfect, but it's something Dove can be proud of, and it's something that was worth the effort. And the minute I type in the last edits and strike through the written notes with this pen, we can celebrate. And it will be over, and I will go home. This time, there won't be an excuse to come back. I put the pen down. Break time!
Chapter 13. Dove. The doorbell rings and there's an unmistakable chaotic bustle and laughter on the other side of the door, mixed in with the suspicious sounds of hushed whispers. Oslo goes racing to the door and starts jumping up and down.
"Is that my friend Sophie's voice?"
Abby asks. She's just put her pen down. "I thought I heard Daniel's laugh, though, and was that Caleb, too?" Abby and I head to the door.
"Stand back," I mouth,
and then open it very suddenly. Nobody falls through the doorway and lands in a pile over the threshold at our feet, which was kind of what I was hoping for. Instead, two women are standing on the top step next to Daniel and Caleb, laughing. They fake scream when they see Abby and lunge forward to give her hugs.
"Surprise," Daniel says to me with a lopsided grin.
We don't hug, but that's partially because he's holding a very large box. Caleb does, though. He's a teddy bear built like a linebacker.
"Welcome back," I say.
I look at the Abby dog pile and then back to Daniel.
"Hi," I say to the women. They look up, wave, and then start cooing over Oslo.
"Abby's friends," Daniel says. "Sophie on the right, Leia on the left. We just met on the stoop. A nice coincidence."
He looks at Abby and points to Caleb.
"Our third musketeer, Caleb."
"You're still here," Caleb says to her.
"Excellent."
"So nice to meet you," Abby responds, blushing.
"I suppose I should pack," she mumbles.
"Don't leave now," Daniel says. "We all just got here too."
Abby turns to look at her friends. Daniel raises his eyebrows and gives me side eyes. Caleb tries to hide his smile.
"Well, my work here seems to be done," Abby says gaily. "And I'm sure Dove wants his life back."
It's like a gut punch somehow.
"Not really. I kind of like it the way it is right now."
Daniel pretends to mess around with the box, and while he's out of Abby's sight line, he gives me a questioning look. I shake my head and frown to telegraph,
"Obviously, if we're done with the book, it makes sense she's leaving. No, nothing happened. No, I don't think she's interested."
For some reason, Abby's friends immediately look at me before shifting their gaze back to her.
"Are we in a hurry?"
Leia asks. Daniel steps over the threshold.
"I just schlepped 1,000 pounds of potatoes over. Nobody is going anywhere."
Abby starts laughing. Sophie and Leia look at each other.
"Latke party,"
yells Sophie as she puts her arm around Abby and hustles her toward the kitchen.
"Potatoes?"
I am incredulous, but beyond pleased to have a reason for Abby to stay. Within 20 minutes, the kitchen is filled with the smell of hot oil and sizzling potato and onion shreds. Caleb and I are manning the griddle while Sophie and Abby form the patties, and Daniel grates a second bowl of the fixings. Somehow, everybody in here, all at once, swapping jobs and passing the manuscript pages around during breaks in the cooking action. Sophie is the one who works on Bubby's book covers. She also seems to be a true fan of the series, and it's especially gratifying to hear her call out things like,
"I love Oslo,"
and
"the bit describing the shenanigans with the pot of poinsettias falling off the back of the moving van in front of the town patrol car is so D.B. Ziegler."
It doesn't bother me at all that she's abdicated onion grating responsibilities to me.
"I can't find applesauce," Leia says to me in a panicked voice. "Tell me there's applesauce."
"It's probably behind the orange juice," I say. She pokes around in the fridge and then gives me a jubilant smile.
"Got it. Daniel, you're tall," I hear Abby say behind me. "Can you help me with something?"
I look over my shoulder to see what she needs, but I've got onion hands anyway. "This is it. We can add the eggs and the rest of the stuff," I tell Leia, who turns and grabs the chopped onions and sweeps them from the cutting board into the mixing bowl. I can tell the heat's just right on the griddle now. Caleb and I use the spatulas to form individual latkes in a tidy row on the heat. Abby's friend Sophie looks up from the manuscript.
"Mmm,"
she says as the latkes spit and crackle and brown.
"That smells amazing,"
Abby yells from the living room. I smile to myself and then flip a few latkes, pressing down for a better crust. Daniel walks in, dusting off his palms, then goes to the sink to wash his hands.
"I didn't think you'd actually finish the book."
he says to me just as Abby joins the kitchen chaos. Her head whips over when he says that.
Really?
She asks, sounding offended.
Hmm.
I notice that she moves slightly closer to me, almost like she's defending me against Daniel.
If you thought Dove would struggle, why did you leave him to it?
Daniel reaches over and grabs a piece of celery off the crudité plate
that Leia is now putting together as some sort of counterbalance to the grease we're about to consume. He crunches down hard and says in a very nonchalant tone,
"Because he told us he wanted to be sad and alone, and we decided to respect that."
Caleb makes an annoyed grunting sound that projects how difficult it was for him to respect that. Abby's mouth drops open.
"Don't you know that's just something people say, and then the minute they close the door, they regret it and start drinking way too much beer in their underwear?"
Sophie looks up.
"Wow, that's quite a visual."
I smiled down at the latkes. Daniel remains unperturbed.
"We offered to sit Shiva. Just a small circle of friends sitting Shiva and keeping a bonkers secret involving Dove impersonating his famous grandmother's writing. But Dove said no.
He only wanted to work on the book. I invited him to join me and my family in New Jersey, but no. He only wanted to work on the book. Caleb proposed that we travel somewhere fun and warm, but no."
Abby looks more sympathetic toward Daniel as she finishes his sentence for him. "He only wanted to work on the book."
Daniel nods and spreads his arms in a "what could we possibly do if he insisted on impersonating his grandmother alone" gesture.
"I bet you were awfully relieved when Abby here stepped in to help,"
Sophie says. Caleb releases a heavy sigh.
"You have no idea."
"That's a lot of latkes," I say, piling the last one off the griddle onto the top of the stack I've arranged on a platter. "Cold latkes are good, but hot latkes are so much better. Let's eat." In a flurry of activity, we head to the dining room table and start bringing dishes over. All of the desserts I've been making are beautifully arranged on a sideboard next to the main table. And all of Bubby's beautiful porcelain plates and sterling silver utensils are out from behind the glass doors of the china hutch and ready for use. Besides the mountain of sweets, we've got the latkes and sides, the veggies, and a pot of Bubby's homemade chicken soup that just needed a bit of reheating. She made it about 3 months ago and then put it in the freezer.
"Wow. You okay?"
Abby asks quietly while the others are making a tremendous amount of noise serving themselves.
"She was an amazing cook, too. Not just a baker," I say. "And when that freezer is empty, there will be nothing left in this kitchen that she made with her own hands."
"But her books will last forever,"
Abby says, squeezing my hand for a moment.
"Okay, let's get this show on the road,"
Daniel calls out. Everyone lets out a great cheer, and we dive into the feast. 2 hours later, we're happy, stuffed, and warm. I'm rifling through drawers, hunting for more matches for the menorah. Daniel and Caleb are with Sophie and Leia, helping stuff fresh candles in the menorah.
"Will you do the honors?"
Abby asks. I strike a match and light the candle as everyone gathers around for the prayers. Abby is wearing a children's party hat that has no relationship to the holiday and must have gotten mixed in with the usual decorations, but her expression is very solemn when she recites the blessing. At times in my life, these blessings felt like going through the motions, and then at times, they meant a lot more. Tonight, they mean more than ever. I watch Abby, thinking how lucky I am right now, surrounded by friends. Not long ago, I was so miserable. I'm obviously still sad, but I'm no longer wallowing. I stare at Abby through the warmth of the menorah flames.
"Did you do this for me?"
I ask Bubby in my head.
"How did you know she's what I needed?"
Abby looks up and catches my eye.
"Nice, right?"
"Nice. I agree."
Chapter 14. Dove. The kitchen is spotless, the food is packaged, stowed, and sent home with our friends. The candles in the menorah are about to extinguish. Abby's put all her stuff back in the bag she came with. All the office supplies and the fuzzy slippers and her laptop. All of it. We're staring at the last page in the manuscript. "This is it."
"Well," I say. "Go ahead."
I think you should do it, Abby says, standing up from the chair and ushering me in. I sit down and pick up the last page we printed and scrawled edits all over in red ink. There's only one correction left to type into the computer. It takes about 2 seconds to make that final change. That's it. The book is done. Come what may, whether we pulled it off or we didn't, Bubby's book, her series, is completed, as she wanted. Well, is all I can think to say. I stand up and look at Abby. She looks at me. I pick the discarded pink and orange scarf off the bookshelf, stick it back on my head, and start running around the living room, cheering and tossing out fist pumps. Woohoo! Oslo starts barking, trying to figure out if we're happy or sad. We're happy and sad, Oslo. He leaps off the sofa and runs after me. I pick him up and do a little dance. Abby's covering her mouth with her hands, but isn't hiding her enormous smile. Let's celebrate, she yells, dashing into the kitchen for the bottle of champagne that's been sitting in my crisper for way too long. Will you do the honors? Abby asks, returning with the bottle and two glasses. I pop the bottle of champagne and fill the glasses. Abby holds hers up to me. To D.B. Ziegler. To D.B. Ziegler, she repeats.
L'chaim, I add.
We take a swig of champagne.
I don't know how we did it, Abby says, ruffling up her hair. It's hard for readers to say goodbye. This was an amazing feat. Well done, Dove.
Go us, I say. This would not have been possible without you.
Maybe you and I should start a new series, Abby says.
I scoff dramatically, as if it's that easy to write a book. Abby puts her hands on her hips.
You gotta do what you gotta do.
We smile at each other. I head over to the computer and press print. We stand there listening to the machine, sipping our drinks until the entire final manuscript is stacked on the printing tray. The printer goes silent. We stare at the book. I glance over at Abby, not sure how to say what I want to say. Not sure what I want to say. I feel unsettled. I don't understand it. I hope the editor likes it, I mutter, testing out if that's why I'm nervous. No, I don't actually care if the editor likes it. We did our best by Bubby, that's it. That's what I wanted.
It's okay if she asks for revisions. That's normal, Abby says.
When should I tell her about Bubby's passing?
I can let everyone know in person when we're all back in the office. Then our team can suggest some ways to share the news publicly, and we can be the one to issue the press release. Unless you'd like to do it.
No, please handle it for me. That would be such a relief.
Abby nods. Of course. And I think it would be okay to have your name on the cover, too. I'll bet your grandma would be proud of that.
I don't care about the recognition, but I don't want to lie. And if mine's on it, yours should be, too.
Nah, I don't care about the recognition either. But we can figure that out later. For now, our work is done.
The hardest part is over, I say. Our eyes meet, and I can tell she knows I'm talking about more than just writing the book.
Well,
Abby puts her empty champagne glass down on the desk next to mine. We look at each other. More champagne? I ask.
I better not, she says, and then hesitantly adds, I should head home.
Right, I say. But it's not right. It's not right at all. I realize my problem. I understand why I feel unsettled. It's because Abby doesn't want a second glass of champagne. She isn't looking for an excuse to stay. And I want her to stay.
Abby, I'll tell you. Oh, sorry,
she says since we've talked over each other.
You go.
No, you go, I say, and then instantly regret it.
I was going to say that I'll tell you once I've shared the news about your grandmother with the team at Tea and Sympathy. I'm sure there will be an outpouring of cards and flowers from people who have worked with her over the years, if that's okay.
Of course it is, and thank you again for handling that. Her stuff is by the door, and all she has to do is walk to the foyer and pick up her bags. She does, and then whirls around and says,
Dove, I...
Just when I say, make sure you have everything before you go. She gets a funny expression, but only nods.
I'm pretty sure I have everything I came with.
What were you going to say before? I ask.
Nothing. Just take care of yourself. I guess we'll see each other later.
She takes a step toward me. Let me carry those down for you. I open the door and walk ahead with her totes and then take her hand to steady her as she navigates the icy stoop. Her hand feels warm and soft in mine, and I don't want to let go. But Abby does let go when she takes the bags from me at the bottom of the stairs. Should I say what I'm thinking? I don't want to mess up the friendship if she's not interested, and she seems in a hurry to go. Well, bye. She chirps and walks past me down the sidewalk toward the subway. Suddenly she spins back around, wobbling a little on the slippery ground. I forgot. I'm still wearing your sweatshirt, she says. She puts her bags on the ground and starts to take off her crossbody. Don't take it off. You'll freeze, I call out. Keep it. As a Hanukkah gift.
Abby. I keep it together for half a block before the tears start down my face. I should have asked for a second glass of champagne. I'm only processing it now. I guess it's really over. The end happened so fast, and then I was out the door. It's over. All of it. Dove. Hey, Abby. My breath hitches. Did Dove really just call me? I can hear boots pounding the snowy pavement. Louder, Dove says, I really need to finish my sentence. I don't turn around because now I'm openly sobbing. Wait up! It wouldn't be hard to catch me. I'm shuffling through snow with my stuff, and I can barely see because my eyes are blurry with tears. Dove catches up quickly and turns me around. What happened? You were fine when you left just a minute ago. I can't look up at him, so I stare straight into his chest. The story's over. It's really over, I say sadly, sniffling and hiccuping through my tears. Dove rummages around in his pants pocket for a moment and then hands me a tissue, which I use to noisily blow my nose. Thank you, I say with as much dignity as I can muster. What sentence? He looks down at me and gently dabs at my tear-streaked face with his sleeve. The one that started with Abby, I, and should have ended with please stay with me. He smiles, an obvious question in his expression. I put my hands over my blotchy face and cry even harder. I'm so happy. And love is way better than dignity anyway. I drop my hands, collect myself, and look into his eyes. Why didn't you say so sooner? I ask, smiling up at him. Dove answers me with a boyish grin. I guess I'm still learning how to write a proper romantic arc. Does it have to be proper? I ask, standing on my tippy toes. Maybe not. Dove mutters. He pulls me into his arms, and his mouth slants over mine in the perfect kiss. Epilogue. 1 year later. Abby. Cherished mystery writer D.B. Ziegler's old house has seen a lot of changes over the last year. For one thing, there's a new sectional sofa and a couple of extra leaves in the dining room table. Dove and I needed to expand a bit, because our friends sometimes come over all at once. That said, we don't regularly have this many card tables set up in the living room in the space where his grandmother's writing desk used to be. But tonight is the first night of Hanukkah, and we're doing it up big. In fact, the townhouse we now live in together is decorated top to bottom for the Festival of Lights. I may have overdone it a little, but Mrs. Ziegler had so much to choose from in her storage. We've put out star-shaped soaps in every one of the bathrooms, along with blue guest towels and bud vases filled with stems of yellow winter jasmine. I went through an entire trunk of holiday-themed afghans that she'd personally crocheted, and once I explained to Dove that using them all at once wouldn't be too many, he helped me choose which ones to display and where. So just about everything's ready for the party, and the guests will be here any minute. Just one last decoration to deal with. Which is why I'm standing on a step stool, fussing with a fluffy gold garland I'm trying to tie to the living room chandelier. Dove is in the kitchen, working on defying gravity with a pile of latkes designed to beat last year's record for height. Early this morning, he was pretty down at himself for not having more of Deborah's recipes baked this year. But I think six is a lot for someone who is also making all of the main dishes for a house party. We've invited all our friends and relatives, along with all Deborah's publishing friends, authors and editors alike, who didn't know what happened this time last year and never had a chance to either mourn her loss or celebrate her life. Abby, he calls from the kitchen. Did you still need help? I'm okay, I yell back, balancing precariously on the step stool. I try to loop the end of the garland on the crystal stem of the chandelier one more time and miss again. Wobbling, I nearly fall off. Suddenly, there are stabilizing hands around my waist. In a feat of multitasking that I can totally appreciate, Dove is able to simultaneously kiss my neck while reaching over my head to attach the garland for me. Thank you, I murmur, turning to face him. He lifts me off the stool, holding me against him in a great big bear hug for a moment before setting me down again. Everything okay in the kitchen? I ask. Yeah, he says. But his face says he's still bothered about falling short on the baking. Don't worry, I say. I don't think you're going to need anything else. He nods, but he's still clearly unconvinced. I guess there are still 7 nights to get it all done, he mutters. The doorbell rings. You ready to get this party started? I ask. Absolutely, he says, striding over to the front door. A blast of cold air sweeps into the foyer as our first few guests step into the house. Sophie and Leia lead the parade. Next are Daniel and Caleb, one on each side helping one of Deborah's author buddies up the stoop steps. A car pulls up, and out of it comes Deborah's editor with another famous writer I recognize from the Edgars. Another friend, I assume. A couple of guys head in off the sidewalk from the direction of the A train. Daniel seems to know them because he gives them a wave. In the foyer, everybody starts hugging Dove and shaking his hand, handing him gifts, putting ridiculous things on his head, and trying to wrap him in decorations. It's so cute to watch him have fun. Where should I put the stove? Leia asks. Should it be in order? I'm number 18. She holds out a covered cookie tin. Dove stands up from where he's crouching on the floor, petting a very excitable Oslo. We adopted him from his owners when they moved after the holidays last year. Number 18? He asks in confusion. I'm grinning like a fool. And then recognition passes over his face. Sophie holds out her tray. I'm book 12, apricot balls. A very well-dressed lady in a sleek black dress and rhinestone shoulder pin produces a covered platter from her leather bag. Book 6 here, strudel. A blonde woman in an orange blazer steps forward with a cake carrier. I recognize her as an editor at Audible, where my grandmother had a huge audiobook following. Book 14, carrot cake. Deborah's editor from Tea and Sympathy holds out yet another plate. This is the one with the strawberry tarts. I remember that the dog's name was Wellington, but I can't remember which book in the series that was. Can you believe it? At least 10 people turn around simultaneously and say, Book 23, in near unison. Dove looks at me over everybody's head with a huge grin on his face. Thank you, he mouths, because he's figured it out. Everybody in Deborah's life and Dove's life have covered all 26 recipes from her 26-book mystery series. After all the sweets are arranged in order on a table, I pull out a special set of little cards I made for the desserts, each one with the name and number of the relevant book and the name of the recipe. When I finish putting the cards on the tiny little stands, Dove backs me into a spare closet and says, Best Hanukkah present ever. I knew you'd love it, I say. All 26? I do love it. But I wasn't talking about the recipes. I was talking about you. Thank you, Abby. Can you even fathom how much I love you? Dove knows me well enough now to tell a lot from the expressive sounds I often make instead of forming complete words. So when he kisses me again, and all I can say is, I know he already knows how much I love him too. The party is just ramping up. It will be another 5 hours until we're alone together again in this house of ours. Sure, we've started making it our own, but some things we'd never want to change. In the bedroom upstairs that we converted into a dedicated writing room are all of Deborah Ziegler's books, her awards and newspaper clippings, and a whole lot of handmade blankets. The story notes we rescued from the fireplace sit carefully stacked next to the computer. It's the perfect room for Dove and me to focus on writing the new D.B. Ziegler series, crafted with the loving support of Dove Ziegler and Abigail Shore. Dove whispers in my ear that we ought to make an effort to mingle. Holding hands, we exit the closet and head into the thick of the party to join our friends and family in front of the big picture window. The glow of a street light illuminates a slight dusting of snow falling from the sky. I catch Dove staring across the street at a townhouse just like ours. They're having a party too, and it's all lit up with holiday lights. Dove hoists his drink to toast the host opposite us. And then he looks back at me, squeezes my hand, and gives me a smile of pure happiness.
This has been an Audible original, produced by Audible. Written by Liz Maverick. Performed by Andrew Iden and Eva Kaminsky. Executive producer for Audible, Rose Hilliard. Produced by Sarah Cosa-Paglusa. Edited by Sarah Cosa-Paglusa. Mixed and mastered by John Dracy. Head of production at Audible Studios, Mike Charzik. Head of creative development at Audible, Kate Navin. Chief Content Officer, Rachel Giazza. Copyright 2024 by Liz Maverick. Sound recording copyright 2024 by Audible Originals, LLC.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.